Well, welcome everybody. It's Father's Day, and it's kind of a sad day for me because the last time I saw my son was 12 years ago on Father's Day, and he was a mess, and I don't know. I don't know if I handled it poorly or not. I did the best I could. I've learned that there's nothing I could have done differently to save him, but I was doing a fourth step with somebody today and trying to look at the fourth column, and when I look at the fourth column, I don't have any anger towards my son. I never did. But I realize I made decisions in my life that probably hurt him and put him in a position to be harmed. It didn't make him a drug addict and didn't make him a mess of his life, but you know, I could have been a better dad, and I see that, and I would have been if I could have been. But I didn't have the program, and now I can see it, and I'm trying to be the different person. And I believe he's at peace now. That's all I can hope for any of us. Anyway, we're going to talk tonight about Bill's story, and we're going to read some powerful pages. And why do we study the book? You know, why do we keep going over and over it? At least for me, reading Bill's story today, I saw some new things. And I didn't see it like the truth about Bill's story, but I see there's spiritual words in there. It's like when I study the scriptures. I'm not comparing the big book to the scriptures, but the scriptures, the more I study, I realize I didn't understand what I was reading, and I couldn't read it on my own. So the big book, I'm glad we had the seminar in town, get people interested in the book, but I have to keep studying the book over and over again to see the message, and so I can put it into practice. And so I think we'll keep doing this three times a week, if that's okay. And we're doing Bill's story, and then Wednesday night we're starting step four. And I'm sure I'm going to see new things to help me practice the steps better. And if you haven't done step four, please come and listen. And you'll see how simple it is, but it's so powerful. And I've been studying the scriptures a lot, and they tell me how I'm supposed to be obedient to the Lord, my Lord, as God as I see him. I'm not talking about what anybody else should do. But what I don't see is the 12 steps to be obedient. I don't see, what do I do when I'm angry? What do I do when I'm afraid? How do I connect back to the Spirit? And that's the power, I think, of these 12 steps for every human being. What do you think, Steve? It's true, right? And so we're really lucky because these are the principles of living a spiritual life. And I could want to live a spiritual life and want to be obedient, but like I talked about yesterday, I leave the kingdom all the time. And if you saw that handout, it says, when you enter the kingdom, Sandy Beach tells the story, you want to enter the kingdom, but there's somebody standing at the door. And the guy says, well, you can't come in. You're still bringing your old idea about this and your old idea about that and your fears and your resentments and all that stuff. So that's why on page 84 it says we're now in the world of the Spirit because we've hopefully faced and be rid of enough to enter the kingdom and the world of the Spirit. And then how do we stay there? That's 84, 85. 86 and 88. Next Saturday, we're going to read the powerful paragraph on page 84. It's like eight lines that tells me how to live a spiritual life. Eight lines, maybe nine. I didn't count. We'll count Saturday. So anyway, tonight we're going to read Bill's story. And we're on page five. And I'm telling Jimmy something. No review tonight. We're starting on page five, and we got to the where he woke up, and this had to be stopped. His drinking. Anybody relate to that? Mm-hmm. He saw he could not take so much as one drink. Anybody agree with that? Now, why couldn't he take one drink? He was a smart guy. Because he had no power once it was in his body to keep from drinking because he had this phenomenon of craving. Anybody else have that in the room? Anybody ever think of drinking anymore? Every once in a while, does a thought come in your mind? If it ever does, what I think about is I'm going to have enough. You know, I don't get it that often, but, you know, is there enough? And when I realize that, I'm telling myself, no, bad idea, Michael. And I don't really focus on it, but I just know. Did anybody go to the liquor store and make sure they had enough? Did anybody not? And did anybody hide alcohol?
Yeah.
Yep. Now, alcohol is a legal substance. And I think anybody hides a legal substance is probably an alcoholic. I mean, that's probably the definition of alcoholic. But it's not in the big book, so don't hold me to it. So he had written promises to his wife. He was through forever. And then he meant business, and so I did. And I believe him. Does anybody believe him? I believed myself when I thought I meant business. And the problem is that I had no power. And I was believing in the wrong person. I thought I had this. And I think of that in other areas of my life. And when I'm running my life and I'm running on my power, things don't go well. So shortly afterwards, he came home drunk. What a shock. There had been no fight. So the first paragraph we read is about the allergy. The second paragraph we're going to read tonight is about the mind. So he knew he couldn't take one drink, and he said he was going to quit. And then shortly afterwards, he came home drunk. So what happened? And he said there had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Remember, at certain times, we cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago. We're without defense against the first drink. Now, a lot of people who have been here have been sober a long time, and many days, but I need to remember this. I need to be reminded of this because I'm an alcoholic, and I have to understand that I have no power to keep from drinking today. Anybody agree with that? Now, if I think I have some power to keep from drinking today, then I'm separated from the power that keeps me from drinking. I only have power if I'm connected to my higher power. If I'm connected to Michael, I don't. And this isn't the kind of program where we do it with God's help. It's not a Michael help, God help program. It's all God. It's not a self-help program. Self-help got me here. It's totally God help, complete surrender. And we're going to talk about that because we're going to see it in these pages. So see, just in two paragraphs, I could see a lot of the spiritual principles of the 12 steps. Someone had pushed my drink away and I'd taken it. Was I crazy? See, he's beginning to wonder. He had an appalling lack of perspective. Isn't that an interesting way of talking about it? Lack of perspective means he couldn't see the truth about the drink. He had the wrong perspective, the wrong view. Seemed not being just near just that. So here's what he did. He renewed his resolve. That makes sense, doesn't it? We're going to try harder. I tried again. Now that's an interesting statement. It's three lines. It's not Stu's favorite line, but it's getting close, isn't it, Stu? I tried again. I tried again. As long as I keep trying, nothing's going to work. Because if I'm trying again with my resolve, I'm not surrendered. I'm not defeated, right? If I'm still trying on my own, and with my resolve, I'm defeated if I'm trying to fix this myself. And so as some time passed and confidence, he became confident, began to be replaced by cocksureness. So he's cocky about the whole thing. You know, I can handle this. I've got it. And I've seen that in the meetings and talking to people, and then you don't see them. Once you start thinking you've got this, you're in trouble. And so I never have gotten this. I don't get it. I have no control over this. I have to go to God constantly. That's why we talk about daily surrender, moment by moment surrender, complete surrender. I have to stay seeking God all the time. Now, I don't do that consciously today, so I don't take the first drink. I do that consciously, so I am undisturbed. And so that I feel okay. And I feel better when I'm with God than when I'm not. And I don't want to have anger and fear. And I don't want to harm people. He laughed at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. Notice it's very well written. I hadn't seen it before. It's all, I did this. I did that. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I'm beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself, this is great, I would manage better next time. Anybody relate to that? We're laughing, but it's brilliantly written. I'm going to manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk now, right? Because I took the first one and I did. Now, I want you to compare the line here. The remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. Anybody relate to that? But then, and we'll read this paragraph, but I just want to skip to the next line. It says, he endured this agony for 2 more years. So the remorse, horror, and hopelessness the next morning were unforgettable. The courage to battle was not there, but he hadn't surrendered yet. And in fact, we have to understand that when Bill W. was going through this, there was no AA, there was no 12 steps, there was no program. He had nowhere to go. So he thought he had to fix it himself, right? Now we can come to AA, we can have the book, we have sponsors, we can work the steps, there's hope for us. And so the only way he got from there, and the agony of 2 years, to writing this book was the power of God. If that is an example of what God can do for you, if you're in this hopeless situation, nothing else will be. He had a terrible sense of impending calamity. Anybody ever have that? I lived at impending calamity. Anybody have a lot of fear when they came in? I didn't want to look at the mail. I didn't want to answer the phone. You get it? It's all bad. Now, I still have that, but I laugh about it because I'm always going to have fear, but I don't pay attention to it. I laugh at it. I don't care about the mail anymore. And I still don't answer the phone. My wife does, but anyway. But if somebody texts me, call me right away. My first thought is, oh, what did I do? Anybody else have that? Am I the only one? I guess I am. I'm sicker than others. But, you know, you always wonder, well, did I do anything? Did I do anything wrong? And then I say, well, I couldn't possibly be. And so I call them. Anyway, I'm getting better, but I still have these issues. It says the market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Not today. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. Now, look at the words. Gin fixed what? His spiritual condition. He felt like crap. He had impending calamity. He had horror and hopelessness. Alcohol is a spiritual, they're called distilled spirits, right? And they're spirits, and they solved our spiritual malady. But because we have the allergy of the body, we can't live with alcohol, we can't live without it. And so that's a hopeless condition. 2 bottles in oblivion. Did anybody ever drink for oblivion? What did it fix? And I wrote fear, anxiety, shame, and guilt, right? Now, how do we fix fear, anxiety, anger, and shame, and guilt? We do the 4-step, and we learn the prayers, and we have God turn us from our fears and our anger and our actions. The mind and body, he endured it for 2 more years. The next paragraph, he's going to jump out the window. He moves the mattress into the basement. Doctor came with sedatives. Page 7. He landed on the rocks because he was drinking gin and sedative. People feared for my sanity, so did I. And he was losing 40 pounds underweight. He was a thin man to begin with. He was dying. Bill W. is actually dying now of alcoholism. And this is about 1933. And then the next paragraph, he's taken to the town's hospital, and he had hydrotherapy. They sprayed water at him and mild exercise. And belladonna is kind of they use Valium now, Librium and stuff, but that had some effect on the mind. Now, here's a line that I'm not sure I completely, it's not that I disagree with. I met a kind doctor who explained that though certainly selfish and foolish, I had been seriously ill bodily and mentally. Well, he was mentally ill because he kept drinking, right? And he was bodily ill because he had the allergy. But he was certainly selfish, and because of the spiritual malady, then he drank. So the doctor didn't mention the spiritual illness, but he does talk about in his letter, we're irritable, restless, and discontent. And how? Yes. And so, but he understood why he couldn't take the first drink, and he understood why he couldn't keep from drinking. But until he understood that he had to live a spiritual life, nothing could change, right? And he didn't have the power to do that. He's gonna learn about that in the next couple pages. It'll leave me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened, no power, when it comes to combating liquor. Anybody agree with that statement? But look at this one. It often remains strong in other respects. Isn't that what's our problem? Where self-will run riot. So we have self-will run riot, but the will we need to keep from drinking, we don't have. Isn't that ironic? It's our self-will that kills us, but our self-will can't give us the power to keep from drinking. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. He understood. So he understood himself now. He fared forth in high hope. Now, this is very key lines here.
Which lines?
The last lines on page 7, the second paragraph. Understanding myself, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. So anybody come here and stay sober, and you hear how great their lives are, right? They're sober 2 or 3 months, things are getting better, right? They're not drinking. He went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Now, a lot of people come to AA and they want self-knowledge. They come here to learn, and they're going to learn this book, and then they're going to get smart, and that's how they're going to not drink. But this book is about not learning to get smart. This book is learning everything you're wrong about and how you can let go of all the things you're wrong about, uncover, discover, and discard all those things that aren't true and aren't from God. Now, what kind of knowledge do we need if we're going to keep from drinking? God knowledge. And we didn't have any God knowledge because we never allowed God to work in our lives. But self-knowledge didn't work, right? In fact, you know, I'm sure I could quote the big book on the way to the liquor store. I could probably recite page 84 and 85 while I'm getting the drink. And that won't keep me from drinking. But if you know what you need to do and then you do it, it's for people who do it, right? I heard that guy said that this weekend. This AA is for people who do this. And if you do it, then you'll have God knowledge. The frightful day came when I drank once more. Now, why did he drink again? Because he had no power to keep from drinking. His mind couldn't live sober. He got irritable, restless, discontented, and he sought alcohol. So he wasn't a bad person, was he? No, he was an alcoholic. We can't keep from drinking. Now, a lot of times we feel we have ourselves on the resentment list and this and that. That was never true for me. I did a lot of bad things and I made a lot of bad decisions, but I realized I had no power to do differently, and that my only problem was that I managed my life, and I had this delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of managing well. And my motives were always good to me. They always made sense. So I just had the wrong manager, the wrong director. We have the broad gate and the narrow gate. I took the broad gate, and the broad gate's without God. And the narrow gates with God. And the broad gate got me to destruction, right? That's where they got the two doors from, you know, in AA, from the 7th chapter of Matthew's. The broad gate, the narrow gate, live a spiritual life or else, alcoholic death. You've only two alternatives to face. That's where they got that from the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7. A good stuff, by the way, in there. His body was declining like a ski jump. I think that's what happens. I could see it in my cancer practice. Patients had advanced cancer, and they'd kind of hang on, and they'd walk into the office, and they could dress themselves, and they could eat a little bit, and they were, you know, they could drive, they could do things. And then within 2 weeks, they're in the wheelchair. 2 weeks later, they're in hospice house. 2 weeks later, they're gone. You can hang on for so long, and then it overwhelms them. Same thing happens with their alcoholism. So he's in the hospital now, and he's having, he's a mess. And Dr. Silkworth is now talking to Lois. And if you see the movie, they're out in the hall, but he could hear them. And it says, they did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea that he would have to go to the asylum or die. Why? Because he was exhausted. He didn't want to live anymore like he was, right? Anybody get to the point where you just don't care anymore? It's just, it was pretty bad. It was a devastating blow. Now, here's the key thing. Oh, and I wrote for God knowledge. It's a relationship with God. But I wrote, it's not like a brother-sister relationship with God or brother-brother. It's father-son. He's the father. I'm the son. He's the employer. I work for him. He's the director. I'm the actor. It's a vertical relationship, right, Gary? It's not a horizontal relationship. It's God, not like God's over here. He's going to help me get my prayers answered or get things for me. He's there. I'm here. I just serve him. I keep all my focus on that. It was a devastating blow to my pride. Anybody think that that's a true statement? What keeps us from doing the program? What keeps us from giving up? What, our intellectual pride. What did Dr. Bob say? It says, if you have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. Why don't people want to hear about God? It's their intellectual pride. Their pride. Pride goeth before the fall. Did anybody, is that true? Is that what it says? And then there's a line in the 12 and 12 that we all alcoholics carry this coin, and we hold on to it. And on one side it has pride, and the other side it has fear. Because we're always afraid. And we have excessive pride, and we're always afraid. And how was that living, with excessive pride and fear? It's just horrible. I, who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, now contrast page 8 with what we read in page 1. He was going to be a success. He was going to be a leader. He was going to lead vast enterprises. Everybody was going to admire him. He was going to be a success. And look where he is now. He's dying. He's in the hospital. He was cornered at last. I hadn't seen that before. He thought so well of his capacity to surmount obstacles. Now there's one thing that we couldn't surmount. Our alcoholism, right? And it says he was cornered at last. Did you like that? He's in the corner. And he's surrounded. So he realizes he's surrounded now. He's cornered. Now, I want you to keep this in mind when we read the next paragraph where he describes his first step. And he said he's going to plunge into the dark, joining the endless procession of sots who'd gone on before. He thought of his poor wife. There'd been much happiness. What I would not give to make amends, but that was over now. Now here's where Bill describes his first step. It's very powerful. Every time I read it, I just think, I'm lucky I'm alive. I'm lucky I'm here tonight. I'm lucky I'm sober. He says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair. So I hadn't seen that before. There are no words to describe the end. We can't really describe it to people, can you? You can't describe how horrible it was. But I don't want to forget how I felt. I think that's the grace, that if I can remember how I felt that moment, then I'll keep doing the deal. And I talked about step 0 Wednesday night is when you have that moment of where you're surrounded, and you get the grace to see it, but then you don't do any work. And then eventually your time runs out. Because God will give you the grace to see the truth, but God won't do the work for us. We have to do the work. Loneliness, despair, I found myself in a bitter swamp of self-pity. He didn't just have self-pity, he had a swamp of it. Now, what does he mean if you're new? Oh, I tried so hard. They didn't understand me. Oh, my motives were so good. Look what she did to me. The kids aren't fair. The people at work, blah, 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 blah. And we can't see how we caused all of that. So that's a bad situation. Loneliness, despair, and a swamp of self-pity. But that's not the worst. The worst is quicksand surrounded me in all directions. Now that's not good, by the way. Anybody remember the old Tarzan movies? Where there's always the one poor guy that fell in the quicksand, you know? Poor guy, you know, we saw it coming, right? And quicksand is not good. And it's completely encircling. You get the point, he's cornered. He's circled by quicksand. And so he can't take a step, right? He's standing there. He had met his match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Now, if I called up Bill W. and he read this to me, I say, well, Bill, I got a book for you to read. I got 12 steps to do. I got a place for you to go. All you have to do is follow this path and you'll be okay. You think he would do it?
Yes.
Right? But yet, alcoholics will feel this way and they'll fight it. It takes a lot to get us to this. Alcohol was my master. Now, what I wrote is that this is where he hit bottom in his mind. He could see the truth of his situation. And remember, it says there are those who cannot and will not completely give themselves to the simple program, right? People are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. I think at this moment, Bill W. was constitutionally capable of seeing the truth. He could see the hopelessness of his condition. And I think that's a gift. If I can't see the hopelessness of my condition, then I'm not going to pick up the kit of spiritual tools. That's what it says on page 25. It says, and I'll read it. You don't all have to turn there, but it's powerful stuff. It's presenting the solution. It says, there's a solution. It says, none of us like the self-searching, leveling of our pride, right? Confession of our shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But here's the deal. When we saw that it really worked in others, and when I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of my life as I'd been living it, when therefore I was approached in the people whose problem had it solved, nothing left for me but to pick up the kit of spiritual tools. I mean, that's the deal. When you're in the situation, you realize the hopelessness and futility of life. When you see people who've solved the problem and they ask you to give you a kit of spiritual tools, you're going to pick them up. Now, I'm always reminded when I read this, because I see people fight this, that, you know, I had cancer patients that would have done anything to get better, absolutely anything. And if I said, read this book, read, and listen to these tapes, and we're going to go through this every day for an hour, and then we're going to do the third step. You're going to take it out of a notebook and you're going to write down your anger and your fears. What do you think? You know, they would have done anything. But for some reason, and I don't think we completely understand it, but most alcoholics don't give up. They just don't give up. The people get here, like the 1% get to the AA. Then of AA, it's what, 0.001 of 1% that stays sober for 20 years. So it's a bad disease. And I think it's because we're not able to see the quicksand. We'd never be able to see our match. We can't see alcohol as our master. We still think there's a third door. Trembling, he stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me a bit. Now, I think we need to pause and say the insidious insanity of the first drink on Armistice Day, 1934. That's November 11th, 1934. Now, he died in 1971. That's 37 years. Now, how did somebody get from where he is here to being able to die 37 years later. Something happened to this man. So if you're new here and you don't believe that this works, just look at that. And then, of course, he helped write this book, and Bill W. and founded this meeting. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere, stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it was before the dawn. Something's going to happen now that's going to change my life today. In what month is this? June of 2019. Something's going to happen right now to this man. He's describing it. It was the beginning of his last debauch. I don't think debauches are good, by the way. I was soon to be catapulted, notice the word, into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. Now, to me, the fourth dimension of the existence is the next slide. I always wonder, well, what does he mean? This is the way he writes. He'll tell you something, and then he explains it. He says it's a place where he knew happiness, peace, and usefulness, and a way of life that was incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And to me, that's the world of the spirit. That's when we enter the world of the spirit, that's what we have, happiness, peace. And isn't that what the promises says? We will know peace, we will know happiness, we will be useful. And then this is the end of that bleak November. I sat drinking in my kitchen. And I think I'll stop right here. And I'd like us to think that this man sitting in his kitchen dying, and then God sends someone to him, and we're here today. I don't know if that doesn't strike you. I don't know what will. Because God's going to make his move and send this man, Ebbe Thatcher. We're going to read about that next week. And then we're here today. And then we're going to listen next week how Ebbe got to Bill and all the circumstances that had to happen for us to be here today. So I hope this was helpful. I get a lot out of it. And I'll end with that, and we'll open it up. Thank you.